like to talk about two things today. One is a trip that Wendell made to New Zealand and the influence that he had there on riparian zones, particularly in forestry. And then I want to talk a bit about how his work and many of the other people in this room have influenced my own research, looking at nitrate removal and controlled drainage, and I thank Wayne for his presentation to clear up in my mind some of those aspects of controlled drainage and how that influenced where I ended up going. First of all, a trip down under by Wendell. In 1992, I just finished my PhD, and somehow we managed to get a little bit of money to get Wendell to come down and have a look at what riparian zones were being, or how they were being managed in forestry systems in New Zealand. So he spent 2.5 months with us, and we toured all around New Zealand. Shirley came as well, and we had a wonderful time. But it was quite, I was naive. I was, as I said, a new PhD student in Wendell. The forest companies were very nervous about us doing this, because here was, yeah, as I said, a young graduate, and somebody overseas is going to come and tell them how to manage their riparian zones in their forests. So they were very concerned. But when they met Wendell, things started to change, and this is something that I've always taken with me. It takes a lot more than good science to get change to occur or get people to move. Once they got to meet with Wendell and they got to see that this man was of the land, he worked the land, he understood what it meant to have production and the role of the environment to try and do both. This is the Marlborough Sounds in the top of the South Island of New Zealand. It's very important. Scenic reserve, if you like, and the forest companies weren't going to tell us about this site at all to begin with. They were going to keep a little quiet because they were nervous about what we were going to do, but they were going to go logging in there, and they were concerned about what the sediment load would be like. But after they talked with Wendell, they changed their minds. They wanted to have a discussion. Not only would they talk about the site to us and how they might manage it, they hired a boat and they took Wendell and myself out there, but they also took the Department of Conservation, who was responsible for the conservation side of things, and the local regional councils, which were involved with the environmental side of things. And we got to have a discussion on site about how we might manage the system. So this was beyond how you do science. This was about communication and the connection that Wendell is capable of making with productive land users. And without that, nothing will change. We, at the end of that time, a quick 2.5 months, we got a paper out, and this is one that I'm particularly proud of. It's not in a high-ranking journal or anything like that, but it had some influence. At the end of that time, we held a workshop where we had 60 people around New Zealand come and talk about how we might manage riparian zones. And just as Wendell got up to speak, he must have had a lot of influence, because there was one of the bigger earthquakes that we ever had in Rotorua. And Wendell told me later he was so nervous he didn't even notice it. And the rest of the room is sort of looking really edgy, and Wendell's wondering what's going on. Wendell doesn't know this, but a couple of years later, NIWA, who were the National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research, they came along to these this workshop, and it gave them a push to pull together all the information that they had on riparian zones as well, to come up with a couple of books that are now quite widely used in New Zealand for managing riparian zones. So riparian zone research was well alive and well in New Zealand, but Wendell came along and certainly had, in a very short time, a lot of influence. Onto the research side then. I was doing my PhD, I did a PhD in riparian zones, and this paper and this figure was burned into my mind, showing along the bottom here, where are we? Nitrate concentrations as it moves towards the wetland, and chloride concentrations as well, demonstrating that nitrate was being removed in these riparian areas. And that active denitrification is one of the things that has been shown to occur in these riparian areas for removal of nitrate. Well, I started looking around in New Zealand, and a lot of our riparian zones didn't look like that. They looked more like this. They've been eroded or very narrow, and you sort of started to think, well, there's not much opportunity here for denitrification. So what are we going to do? We've got to find some way. Now, we just had a talk on controlled drainage, and Wendell at the time talked to me about the controlled drainage ideas, where you raise the water table and you look to enhance denitrification. Now, I guess there's still debate about all of this, But what this started to make me, it was the first time that I had started to think about you could manipulate microbial activity at the landscape scale, and how were you going to go about doing that? And this was one approach. Now, at the same time, I was doing a lot of reading around denitrification, and it became obvious that denitrification was active in hotspots within the environment, and that we knew at a microbial scale that these were the components that were controlling denitrification, but it's quite hard to manipulate these things directly. So what Wendell was proposing here is that you control the water regime, and then that through controlled drainage, and that will control where your oxygen is and where your nitrate is to stimulate denitrification. I started to then think a little bit about how we might control organic matter content in soils and in different places, hotspots for the environment, to control oxygen and carbon to stimulate denitrification. And this is essentially what then led to work on denitrification walls, layers and beds, which I'll describe now. This was the very first thing that I tried, which is basically an effort to reconstruct the functions of a riparian zone in an environment where the riparian zone had been lost. And the idea here was that you dig a trench and mix that soil with sawdust, put it back into the groundwater, and presumably be able to stimulate denitrification. So we did that. Here's some sawdust here, mixed in with some soil into a trench here. You can see the groundwater's just started to rise here, and you end up with a product that looks a bit like this. And we monitored that over about a 10-year period or so. Time down the bottom, nitrate concentration here. And the black dots here are the nitrate concentration coming into that wall, and within about a metre and a half as it's passed through the wall, pretty much all the nitrate's been removed. The exception being here, where the groundwater has dropped away and is going underneath the wall. So you get good nitrate removal so long as you've got your hydraulic properties right. If it goes under the wall, it's not going to work. So this has led to a number of other studies around the world. This is where people are looking at similar sorts of ideas. This is in Western Australia, below a feedlot where they've got very high nitrate concentrations, and they're reducing nitrate from about, I think, about 40 or 50 milligrams per litre to about 15. This is in Iowa, where they're building walls alongside tile drains, and this is a recent one that's been put in New Zealand below a plume that's coming from a fertiliser factory. I don't have any data on that yet. So we've had some success, but then when we built another one, we built it in sandy soils, and this is where I worked with a hydrologist, because Wendell told me I should work with a hydrologist, as he has done with Wayne, and how enjoyable that's been, and certainly it was for me. And it took us about 2 years to figure all this out, but in this particular system where we had sandy soils and we mixed the organic matter into the soils, we actually decreased the hydraulic conductivity of that aquifer system, so that then the groundwater would go underneath that wall. So it didn't work in all locations, but I needed to work with that hydrologist to understand that. Of course, if you have a confining layer, such as this one here, you can force the water through the wall like that, but because the hydraulic conductivity of that system is still pretty high, at about half a metre per day. So that's certainly something, and it might be more applicable in the sort of areas that we've heard described today, where we've got these confining layers. So that was the denitrification wall work that I did. I then started wondering if there were ways that I might be able to stop the nitrate leaching below dairy farms before it even got into groundwater. And so what I started to try and do was something called denitrification layers. This is where the topsoil's been removed, and we put in a layer of, in this case, garden chip here, and put the topsoil back on, and started to regrass it. So the concept here that I had was you'd have your organic nitrogen converted through to nitrate, that would hit the denitrification layer and be blown off as nitrogen gas. For this to be of any use, it would have to get rid of a lot of nitrate, otherwise nobody's ever going to do this. So we gave it a go. We put in some suction cup lysimeters down in here that go underneath here, and we had control plots and tried to measure nitrate movement down through the profile. These are the results from this. This is time, and up here we have cumulative nitrogen. This is the amount that was put on in the effluent, and here are our plots down here. Looked real good to start with, in that there was less coming out of the denitrification layers, That's the open circles, then in the control plots. But I'd say actually only when you look at this at the initial startup phase that you've decreased the amount of nitrogen moving through the system, and then they basically track one another. And what we found out was happening, we looked at the organic nitrogen leaching here. The organic nitrogen leaching was a lot less in the denitrification plot where we had the wood chips than in the control plot. So that organic matter that was in that layer was holding back the organic nitrogen for a period of time. Then they started to basically track one another. So the layers were doing a good job just initially at holding up that organic nitrogen, but after that they didn't work. So what was really happening is instead of this, instead of the nitrate coming to here and being blown off, it was moving straight through, and the organic nitrogen was moving through there as well. And one of the other lessons I learned from Wendell in this was he told me very early on when I was a graduate student was I've been wrong more often than I've been right. I didn't believe it then, I don't believe it now, but it really caught me by surprise. He was a major guy telling me that it's okay to be wrong, but you've got to take some chances. And so I've continued to try and take that philosophy with me. Go and work in the field, try some things. If you get it wrong, put your hand up. Say, I got it wrong, move on, do something else. So I'm trying something else. These are denitrification beds now, because that didn't work. Essentially what these are they're great pits lined with plastic, and we've filled them up with organic matter. And we're treating now effluent from hothouses, from domestic effluent, small subdivisions, and from dairy farms. This is one, the very first one that we built at Kinloch. This is 40 metres long by 4 metres wide. There's two of them and about a metre and a half deep. And we've been putting effluent in from a domestic effluent, from a subdivision. What we got down here is thyme then and nitrate concentration. This is the dark brown and the horrible green. This is the input and that's your output. So we are getting nearly 100% nitrate removal through that system, except when we had holiday periods where people all came into town and then you got spikes of nitrate coming through. We tried this then at hothouses. This again is about 40 metres long by about 4 metres wide. Nitrate concentrations here much higher. This is a hydroponic system, so they have very high nitrate concentrations, running around about 250 or so, and getting it down to about 100 or so. This system was purposefully under-designed so that we could get at nitrate removal rates. And here we seem to be having some problems. I suspect that this is an issue with the timing of inlet and outlet sampling, and that it takes 10 days to move down the length of this bed. And I think that these are representing different pools of water that's moving through that system. But we need to check that out to make sure that this system is not reaching the end of its life. So we're continuing to monitor this one. This is the latest one that we've built. This is 200 metres long by 6 by 3, I think. 3,000 cubic metres of sawdust, which is actually quite hard to get. And we've been putting nitrate into that for about a year now or so. Again, this is a system not designed to try and remove all the nitrate, but to reduce it before they then apply it onto land. So again, we're at about 250 milligrams per litre, and we're down to about 100 or so before land application waste. They are looking at extending these systems to get rid of all the nitrate. Again, we seem to have a bit of an issue here that we need to check out and make sure that we aren't losing longevity. One of the important things for this system to understand in these denitrification beds is that the effluent needs to be, the form of nitrogen in the effluent needs to be as nitrate, otherwise it's not going to be denitrified. This is a proportion of the nitrogen in that effluent that is nitrate, so that's 100% nitrate. And this is the amount that then is removed. So your removal efficiency is essentially dependent on having all your nitrogen in the nitrate form. If it's an organic nitrogen or ammonium, it's not going to work. You have to have it as nitrate. So it is a limitation of these sorts of systems. We do also run into some problems with conductivity. In terms of managing to keep that water going through here. The first few beds, we didn't really understand how to, well, we didn't know how to build them at all. We just, well, just dumped a whole bunch of sawdust in a hole. And in places we got that a bit wrong, and we started getting short-circuiting of water that popped up. We found because all the grass was growing very well around the outside of these denitrification beds. We seem to be resolving some of those issues now. So we've looked at, based on some of the riparian zone work and controlled drainage work, about how we can manipulate denitrification at a landscape scale. We've looked at beds, they seem to walls, they seem to work in the right place. We've looked at beds and boxes, they seem to work quite well as well. And the layers, well, we've had no success with these. Other people have worked with denitrification layers in smaller systems where they control the water flow a lot better, and they seem to work. But at large scales, no way. Some of the issues that we get from this are, everybody's always concerned about, well, aren't you going to produce a whole bunch of nitrous oxide? We've certainly looked at that in the walls, and doesn't seem to be much of a problem. We need to check that out in the beds to make sure that we're not producing too much nitrous oxide. Carbon dioxide and methane also could be produced, and we're going to look at that. Hydrogen sulfide, there's sulfate in the glasshouse water, and we could be getting sulfate reduction as well, although I believe the competition between denitrifiers and sulfate reducers will mean that this is probably not a big issue. We need to look at those. So we need to find, we need to have a look at whether there are other adverse effects associated with trying to manage denitrification, but we tend to only look at those other adverse effects if we can demonstrate a positive benefit or demonstrate that we can increase denitrification in those systems. And this is my favourite area, microbial competition for different electron acceptors. So I've got a PhD student who's going to now look at these aspects. We also do worry about soluble carbon loss coming out of the beds in particular, and it's certainly high to start with and then seems to hit a plateau and level off, and it should be okay. But if we have shut down and start-up periods, we may run into problems. Clearly we need to continue to understand the hydrology side of things to avoid any issues of short-circuiting or bypass flow. This is the most recent stuff we're going to try now, is we're going to go back and see if we can stimulate denitrification in surface soils by introducing sawdust particles into the topsoil of pastures when they might do pasture renewal or something like that. And the concept here is to create anaerobic microsites in the soil and try and enhance denitrification in that way as well. We've only just put these trials in. Okay, just to wrap up then, I think we can look at managing denitrification in the environment, but there won't be a single approach that will work, and you've got to understand particularly the hydrology of the system before you're going to get effective approaches. Work with a hydrologist, as I've said, and that's certainly one of the lessons that Wendell taught me, and it's just more fun working with more people. You've got to dare to be wrong. You've got to take some chances out there and try some different things, and if you get it wrong, it's okay. Stand up at a meeting and say, well, I hate trying to publish negative results because people don't like them, but I'm going to keep doing it. But, and just really a final thing and an acknowledgement to Wendell, because he was the first person to really show me this. Great science is fine, but if you can't communicate it, if you can't understand the person sitting opposite you, the person who's trying to manage their land, forget it. And Wendell really has that ability, and in one person, great science, great communication, and leadership was recognized as well, a special package. So thank you, Wendell. Thank you. I was trying to get something established that would remove nitrate before it hit groundwater.
Okay, but if you did control drainage, you raised the water table into that layer, it probably would have been nitrate.
Yeah, I guess that would be true. Yeah, whether you could be bothered with actually doing that, something. But yeah, sure. Yeah.
I'm Matt
Lapp,
and I'm a
PhD
student at
We're reseeding it with ryegrass.
So are you concerned that you're going to have nitrogen deficiency?
Yeah, that could well happen. We may need to fertilize, so we'll need to trade those things off. Yeah, I agree. Daring to be wrong.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a lot of particle board that goes out now, so you're really competing with the market for being able to get, and also 3,000 cubic meters of wood chips, quite a lot of wood chips to train. We're quoting on a job where we may build a denitrification bed that's a hectare in size, and we don't know where quite where we're going to get the wood chips from. It's by a forest, so we may cut the forest down.